The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the Nova Society are those of our guests and panel members and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of any institution any member of the Nova Society is associated with. The material information presented on the Nova Society is for general information purposes only. Reproduction or dissemination for the purpose other than education is prohibited without express written consent of the Nova Society. We'd like to welcome everyone back to the Nova Society, and today Scott and I had a conversation between just the two of us. Keep in mind, this was recorded before the decision by the appellate court in New York State was handed down that reduced the bond requirement from $450 some odd million to around $175 million. But we wanted to take our take on what we thought events around the case had as it related to compromising the office of the President of the United States. So let's listen in. Let me guess, Trump not able to get the money up.
Well, that, you know, that's a fun thing we can talk about for a while.
Okay.
I mean, it's ironic, I obviously, you know, that somebody who has positioned himself as this mastermind business genius, really, really wealthy guy, has to come back to court and say, I don't have the money and I can't find the money and nobody's going to give me the money. And what are we going to do next? And I suppose on one level, it's amusing. But on another level, even though it's kind of out in the open now, like I think we're going to have at least some transparency into this. It's a little frightening because he can get the money from anywhere. And what does he have to do to get the money? And this has been the problem that I've had with Donald Trump all along, was that he's too beholden to other countries and doesn't, in my opinion, love America enough. Certainly doesn't love America more than he loves Trump. And that, what is he willing to do for that money? And it's been the problem all along, because we know that he is affiliated with very dangerous Russian oligarchs and / criminal figures. And, you know, I think we both understand that Vladimir Putin's day job is not to be the head of Russia. It's to be the head of the Russian mob. And that, the idea here is that, you know, Trump wanting to put a tower in Moscow across from the Kremlin was a really big deal that somehow got swept under the rug in 2016. That was a really, really big deal. It was worth millions to him, and not as much as you know people might think. I mean, because he's not actually as wealthy as he pretends to be. So I think the amount that I had read that he was going to get from that Moscow deal, which was being built by other people, he was only lending his name to it and getting some licenses and some of the condos or co-ops that are in the building to lease out to people, was about $35 million. And Trump lied about the whole thing to the American people during the campaign, claiming he had no business dealings in Russia when he did, which is certainly troubling. But now we find ourselves in a position where he's really desperate for some really big money that he doesn't have. And what would he be willing to do to get that money?
Right. And if by some miracle on Monday he was to come up with the money, because we've already heard that 30 bond agents won't do it. Just simply will not do it. Chubb, who he got the first bond for the E. Jean Carroll case, they're not going to do it. So then I think it's very important for the New York State Attorney General and the court to really look at where that money came from. Because like you say, it could come from the Saudis. They gave Jared Kushner $2 billion to the Saudis. $500 million isn't a lot of money. And then how is he beholden then to the Saudis? And even though we don't know today what maybe the Saudis might request of him, we may not know for some time. If he was get into office, they'll call the marker. The bill always comes due.
You know, whether they do or they don't, it hangs over you. And right. And it should be right now that is hanging over the American people. And I do not understand why people can dismiss this and say, you know, well, this is not a big deal, because this is the biggest deal there is. This is what they look for when they recruit assets. They look for weak people who are needy, who need financial help, who are vain, and susceptible to flatter. I mean, he fits the profile of a foreign asset so perfectly.
Absolutely.
That it's frightening that the American people, and I have friends who, you know, are big Trump supporters, who look at him, I guess, in their best moments as the lesser of two evils. I just got done yesterday with a debate with a number of people who said that Biden is just as crooked as he is. And I say, I'm sorry, but if you're going to make that statement, you're going to have to back it up. And please back it up. And all they really had was policy differences and some right-wing spin on things like he's leaving the border open so that, you know, Democrats will come pouring through the border, potential Democrats will come pouring through the border, you know. And I was like, okay, that I think everybody knows that shtick, you know. Yeah. that's not even spin at this point. That's just comedy stuff. And no, that's not the case. So if you don't like Biden, you don't like his policies, okay, that's one thing. But that, don't put that on the same category as somebody who is so severely compromised, so in need of money to keep his phony baloney empire floating. Then you know, it's a real difference, and voters need to see this. You mentioned the state's attorney's office in New York, keeping an eye on where this money is coming from. I hope that there's a FISA court out there that is granting warrants to wiretap his phones so that we can find out where this money is coming from. And, it really is like a national security issue at this point to discover who he's talking to, whether it's the Saudis, the Russians, Chinese. I mean, there are multi-billionaires all over the world who, you know, this would be pocket change for. And what are they going to ask for in return is the frightening question that we need to get answers to.
Do you think that this is why he met with Elon Musk, about a week ago?
Oh, absolutely.
That he was, you know, a lot of people were saying, no, he was meeting with him to get help with the campaign, get Musk on board with the campaign. But, you know, as you look at this coming down the road, you have to ask yourself, wait a minute, was he not asking Elon Musk for $500 million?
Yeah, and it's possible that Trump asks for money in ways that other people don't. I imagine I couldn't ask anybody for money. I couldn't ask anybody for hundreds of dollars, much less hundreds of millions of dollars. and so it's possible that just by meeting with Elon, he's putting that bug in his ear that, you know, I'm a needy guy. And Elon Musk has exposed himself as a highly partisan player, or at least a anti-Biden player in this. I mean, he tweeted yesterday, whatever they call it these days, we can't have four more years of this. I don't know what he was referring to exactly. I don't know if anybody's asked him that question. But he clearly is not happy with the way things are going right now in this country. Not sure what it is that he's talking about exactly again, but that he's going to throw the full weight of his influence, money, and power behind Trump. And that's formidable.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when you really think about it, it kind of goes back to the Clarence Thomas thing. Clarence Thomas taking all of these trips and you know, flights and private jets and this and that and the other from a billionaire. And it's the idea of, again, okay, it was a gift. Yes, I bought your mom's house. I paid off the mortgage. I did this, that, and the other. But you're beholden to them in some way.
Of course.
And eventually, these people did not get rich by just giving money away and not getting something in return. And we talk about China, we talk about Russian, the oligarchs, we talk about, you know, all the different actors that could give Trump this kind of money. Somebody like Elon Musk, that would be equally as threatening to national security. Because, again, he's not going to give them the money and just say, hey, that's between you and me. We did great. No big deal. There's going to be a price to be paid for these kind of things. And it kind of also goes back, and I was listening to something, I think it was on NPR. I can't remember. They were talking about the documents case. And this, in many ways, brings a new twist to the documents case, because he knew before he left office that the New York Attorney General was going to do this. He knew this was going to happen. And the question then came down to, and again, there's no verification of this, it was just a hypothetical. Did he take the documents? Because those documents would be worth it to somebody. They're an asset that can be sold to be able to get the money necessary to pay off, you know, say this $500 million. We know he showed a billionaire from Australia plans about submarines. That's been documented and reported on and verified. What else could he have done with the documents that he had?
Well, we also know that he gave Israeli intelligence to Russia, to Kislyak and what's his name, the other fellow that he met with in private in the Oval Office, and that Israel was really angry about the fact that he gave those secrets away without even checking with them first. We also know that he had a document that he clearly said, hey, it was on video, audio tape. Hey, I could have declassified this, but now I can't. But let's look at it anyway. And this is, you know, 400 pages of war plans against Iran.
Yep.
To, you know, to the Mark Meadows biographer or whoever it was, or ghostwriter. And that we also know that in a response to one of Trump's filings with the court, with Aileen Cannon's court on this matter, that Jack Smith's reply to that in his filing was, if Trump is correct about this reading of the law, there would be no problem with a president taking documents that are classified and preparing them for sale and delivery. And he used those words, sale and delivery, and immediately people on the internet, court watchers or Jack Smith watchers, began to say, did Jack Smith just say that these documents were for sale and delivery? What does he know that he hasn't told us yet? Does he have evidence of Trump selling and delivering these documents? Now, one would think that if that was the case, that Trump would be under arrest. You know, a sting operation would have been organized when the bag man handed over the, you know, the briefcase with the documents or whatever it is, the handbag to people. And it's just as tawdry as that, people. Don't think that it isn't. Remember, Spiro Agnew, when he was the vice president, was getting visits from Maryland businessmen in the parking lot below the White House, taking bags of cash, shopping bags full of cash from them, as he had since he was the governor of Maryland. And so it is that tawdry. These are, as they say as Deep Throat says, these guys are not as bright as you think they are. So that, you know, you would think that there would be a hue and cry about that and we would know more about it. So hopefully he hasn't done that yet, and it hasn't, you know, that hasn't occurred. Or if it has, the people who were involved have been arrested and the documents recovered. But from my understanding, that document that he was talking about that day in New Jersey at his golf course to that writer that document has never been recovered, is not among the documents that were recovered by the DOJ after that FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago. Right. So again, you know, I'm not an insider. I'm not a law enforcement agent or a lawyer, simple college professor, but this is deeply troubling stuff that voters need to take into consideration.
They do. And they need to think about it very hard, because, you know, you mentioned the hope is that if this had transpired, the idea of selling a document delivery, that somebody would have been arrested by now. But I think we've seen just through the past year and the way Trump is handled by the court system and by even prosecutors, they are reluctant. And I've always made the argument, sometimes we take the concept of president of the United States, the office is very important, but we need to separate the office from the person. We have had corrupt presidents in our past. We've had absolutely incompetent presidents in our past. Yes, we must respect the office. However, we cannot let that cloud our judgment or our opinion of the person, because that is a person. And like I say, over the past year, if you look at the court cases and the way these things have gone, the judicial system has bent over backwards in many ways to accommodate Trump. You and I, we'd be in a dark hole someplace, in some prison, a dark hole, and that would be it. But because this is Trump, because this is, and maybe not just because it was Trump, because it is a former president, now that's why these discussions are being had. But it still does not change the fact that, you know, maybe the people on the outskirts, and you've seen a lot of people on the outskirts of the things that Trump has done, have gone to jail. Peter Navarro just went, just took himself to jail, which was such a satisfying thing to watch. It truly was. I mean, because, you know, talk about a snowflake. But, you know, the only thing that I hold is that in what I know about prosecutors, and again, I'm not a lawyer either. Yes, I do have a master's in law, but I'm not a lawyer. I am too a simple college professor. The fact is that most times the prosecution does not show their entire hand. They show what they need to show, and they want to spring something on you when it comes to trial. So my thought is that, number one, as you mentioned, the document from Bedminster, if it hasn't been recovered, they probably know where it is. If they haven't acted upon it, either they know where it is and it's okay, or they know where it is and they know there's nothing they can do about it. So Jack Smith might as well keep that in his back pocket as one of those, you know, Perry Mason, Matlock moments where he can spring it upon, you know, Jack McCoy, where he can spring it upon and win the case. So there's, again, not very comforting. But the fact is that Trump is still, he is vulnerable, and he is his actions make him so compromised. And we cannot have a president of the United States that is compromised in any way.
Yeah, well, I think that's really the bottom line. And again, there's no, you know, we can't trust the court system to come and help us here. We really need the voters to understand this. And if you're out there listening to this and you're a voter and you're leaning Trump, please take this into consideration, that this is incredible stuff that we've never seen the likes of before. And we've used the word unprecedented so many times since Trump came on the political scene in 2011 or whatever it was that he first started talking about Barack Obama not being born in America. And we've used that word unprecedented, but this one really truly is. I mean, when Trump makes a filing in court, as he did yesterday, I think it was, or the day before, where he says no president can operate as president without a total criminal immunity. And all you can think is, man, they've managed to do it for 235 years so far. And I don't know what makes you think that just because you are engaged in criminal behavior that other people are as well. That is a typical Trump trope that he uses all the time. I'm doing it, so I assume other people are doing it too, and we have to do something about it. You know, it's right. Not just not. There's no fact there. There's no there there. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, you know, Dwight Eisenhower, the resident, name your president, did not get into the kind of stuff that Trump is into. And the just the criminal behavior or potentially criminal behavior, you know, and he has been indicted. So, you know, we have to keep using alleged, but we don't have to pretend that grand juries, which are consisting of people who lean left, lean right, lean in the middle, have not found him, have not found cause to indict him. They have. This is not Democrats going after Trump. These are juries, and grand juries are, I think, 23 people. There's evidence here, and it's worth looking at. And if you're a voter, it's worth looking at.
So that's all the time we have for today's episode. The Nova Society is a production of the Phoenix Research Institute. We'd like to thank our sponsor for this week's episode, the Phoenix Research Group, an independent research consortium offering social issue solutions to NGOs and international government agencies through multidisciplinary, nonpartisan, and unbiased research. We'd also like to thank our podcast partners, Buzzsprout, who hosts the Nova Society, Audacity, our editing partners, Podkite, who does all our analytics, iHeartRadio, where people get their music and podcasts, Apple iTunes, the largest source of music and podcasts on the internet, Spotify, the most popular source for the Nova Society. The Nova Society is available on all these and other quality platforms mentioned in our description. We'd like to thank our listeners. Without you, the Nova Society would not be possible. If you have a comment, a question, or would like to be a guest on the Nova Society, we can be reached at nova.society.podcast@gmail.com. Always remember, the power of society is knowledge. So for Dr. Scott Gershwer, Dr. Priscilla Hobbs, Dr. Brooklyn Ann Walden, and all of us here at the Nova Society, I'm Dr. Mark Bound. Be well, and we hope to see you again next time.